Amen. Now, we're going to start with this. Start off with this. I really wrestled with whether to break this down into a sort of a series, but I thought, you know what? That's not my intention. My intention is to simply, I'm tired of hearing the nonsense, and that causes me to go, wait a second. And other people coming to me all the time, many of you as well as many others, and have said, well, what about this? Well, what about that? And I'm just thinking, you know, simply, in all honesty, what we're going to look at here tonight, if you just think about it, it doesn't make sense. Now, let me give you a couple of examples that really sort of stick in my craw. It wasn't but about, I'm guessing, probably couldn't have been more than 2 years, but probably closer to a year ago. As usual, I was watching one of these programs on TV, and it was, of course, about the cosmos and the universe. And it was just, you know, it's fascinating to see the pictures and to learn some of the stuff that we know about it. It really is fascinating. But, of course, the idea was, well, we know that this, you know, this all happened, you know, billions and billions of years ago. And, of course, it goes all to the Big Bang Theory, right, and all of this stuff. And I'm just like going, okay, I'm not going to pay attention to that. But what the program was about was particularly galaxies. And they were talking about how galaxies, you could see the spiral arms as they extend out from the galaxies. Because, you know, it's this idea of spinning, and it really all relates to this idea that the universe is expanding, and it is, by the way. But they were talking about this. Now, having just said that the universe is billions of years old, then they put this picture of a galaxy up on the TV, and I'm watching this thing, and the guy says, now, because we know that we could measure, you know, the space between some of these arms that come off the galaxies, and we, you know, we measured this space at this particular date, and we measured it again at this date, we can see that there's an expansion. And so that tells us that this galaxy is about 7,000 to 10,000 years old. Did anybody catch it? You just got through telling us it was billions of years old. If this thing started spinning billions of years ago, how could it possibly only been around for 10,000 years at the max? It doesn't make sense. And I'm like, am I the only one that see? What is up with this? Talk about talking out of both sides of your mouth. And so those types of things, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and I've touched on this before, again, within a year. We had that astrophysicist come on TV. All of us know, I can't remember the dude's name, he's an Asian guy, Mahukutu or whatever, something. Anyway, he came on, and of course it was just the big discovery of the, what's his name's, I'm not sure if Higgs is the right name, but anyway, the boson. It's in this big table thing, and well, they've discovered this particle that they didn't know existed. Now, this just recently happened. You can check this out. If you don't believe me on this stuff, go on the internet. You can check it out, okay? And supposedly now this particle changed everything, and this particle they said was so significant within the framework of a Big Bang theory that they actually started calling it the God particle. Okay? Because here now we understand is God. This was the source of all that happened. Well, as they continue to test this out since that thing was announced, here they are on national television putting this out that it's this big thing. Well, as they continue to do research on it, has anybody seen or heard of it since? Why? Turns out it's not God. It's a particle. And it doesn't have the properties that can do what they initially went out there and they were so sure, finally defied the scripture and defied all of us idiot evangelical Christians, and surely was going to cause us to believe now in that this idea, this concept that everything started by chance. Well, it didn't happen because it's never going to happen. It didn't happen by chance. So those are the kinds of things that frustrate me. And I hope that as you watch these things, because it's been told to me, this person sits and watches these things and they go, oh, see, you can go back to your church and you can tell them this, you know, because this is proof. And as if this guy standing up on this TV telling us this thing is proof. It's not proof at all. It's what he believes. No doubt's there. But where is the proof? Well, it doesn't exist. But it's put out as if it does. So that's what really has initiated this as we were going through our study in Genesis. And for those of you that are not normally here on Wednesday nights, this is where we took the break because we're getting into the days of creation. And I just felt like we needed to address this issue because I'm just getting so frustrated with this. So that's why I entitled this thing, Why Darwin's Evolution is Still a Theory. Now notice the qualifier, Darwin's Evolution. Okay? Now, that's very significant to keep that in mind. Now, what my intention to do tonight is what has been done before. This is nothing that I came up with. You can go out, and I highly recommend that you do, but I warn you, it is tough reading. But you can go out there and you can find books, you know, all over the place, but in particular on the Institute for Creation Research. They're scientists, folks, applying the same principles that non-Christian scientists apply, because evidence and data is evidence and data. We all have to study it. It's all there before all of us, regardless of what your presupposition is. But what ends up happening is that these guys have, and this had only started back in the 60s, is that they started scientifically looking at this stuff in light of a creation perspective, okay? And what it turns out is that there are books out there, and these are the ones I'm talking about, that Darwin on Trial. Now, these are really tough reading, but they're very good because they will show you what they're doing is they're taking, as I said, all of the evidence and then putting Darwinism on trial to say, does his theory match the evidence? And it's a resounding no, and not coming from the Christians and the creationists. It's coming from the scientists. I have told you guys repeatedly, you got to understand there are literally thousands of evolutionist scientists who are saying that Darwin was wrong, but you never hear it. Because to admit that means that something else had to happen. Well, we know what that something else was. We'll just leave it at that. But that's what you need to understand. That's what's going on. And I have one of those books, and this is one I've been using. This guy, this is a friend of mine, actually, or my family's, Dr. Thomas Kindell. I shared with you guys. He came out, and his thing is Evolution on Trial. Okay. Now, he's going to be here on the 7th of April, and he's going to take the Sunday morning service. I can't wait. And he's going to hang out at my house. So, man, I'm going to have a 10,000 question night, I can assure you, with him. And I'm going to ask him before he comes to bring some of these, because this should be a part of your library. Because this is a collection of literally thousands of quotes from evolutionary biologists, paleontologists, anthropologists, geologists, that the list goes on, that say evolution doesn't work. It's a compilation of all the evidence stacked against this particular theory, okay? So there's all these resources, and I hope that you go out even tonight and look into some of this. You can go on to his website as well. I'm promoting this for him. I hope he's appreciative of this, but it's just really Thomas Kindell, K-I-N-D-E-L-L, and you can go on there and you can look in resources, and he actually has videos available right on the website. You can go on there and watch these things. You can download them, whatever, and then you can get more in depth or as far and deep as you would like to go based on what you want to do. But for our purposes here tonight, it's not to get that in depth, but to simply scratch the surface, because that's all the time we're going to have, all right, unless we did a series on this stuff for weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months. And that's just not my purpose. We want to study Genesis, not evolution, okay? So those are all of the resources that are available. These are the reasons, and I've used these resources, why I have come to this conclusion and felt like I needed to put this out. But the qualifier is Darwin's evolution. Now, why is that significant? Well, as you can see on your notes, that evolution, which literally, if you break it down in its definition, simply means change over time, that's a fact. Folks, evolution happens. No one has ever doubted nor questioned that. Creation scientists included. Things are changing. There's no doubt about it. The difference is, as you can see here, let me just follow the notes, and then I'll just keep myself in line and not find myself wandering aimlessly trying to figure out how to get back. So, number one, these are called mutations, okay? You're a bunch of mutants. Did you know that? Okay? What these are is we see them all of the time. We see them in variant dogs and cats and eye color and flu viruses. Now, when we get to day six in the book of Genesis, where God creates man and animals, he doesn't create poodles and chihuahuas and dachshunds and Doberman pinschers. He creates a male and a female dog. Well, obviously, we have more than just a simple whatever this dog looked like. Whoever knows? I mean, Adam and Eve would have known It would have been their Fido and Fida or whatever, the, you know, you get the idea. But that's what he did. And yet here we are removed and we've got all these. That's because of mutations within the species. But nowhere is there evidence that a dog became a cat or that a dog became a fish. There is no evidence anywhere to support this notion. Okay? Now, there are also bad mutations. It seems like every year there's a new flu virus that's coming around. Did you ever notice that? There's the, what was it last week? What was the one we had last year? What's that? The swine flu. But what was the one you thought you had? Or you that you did have? What was it? Was that the swine? Okay. What's the new one this year? The bird flu? Yeah. So we moved from a bird flu to a pig flu. Okay. But here's the thing. It's still the flu. It ain't changed. Even a mutation in the sense of a virus. Yes, it's mutated, but it's still a flu. It hasn't become a bloody nose. Okay? It hasn't come to be lumps or tumors growing on our bodies. It's still the flu, as dangerous as these things can be. So mutations definitely happen. Okay? We can see it in the human race. You guys know, we minister to these people in Africa. Steph's getting ready to go there. In case you haven't noticed, there's a different color to their skin than ours. Their hair is different. Their eyes are different. Their physical structure is different. And then when we used to work in Asia, those little tiny folks, okay, they're also, very different. But folks, they're human beings. There's no jump that has taken place, okay? In fact, when you get out there into those cultures, especially with the people, and I've shared this with you, and you ask them about this idea that man has evolved for them, you can't say evolved because they don't get it, but if you say that monkey eventually over a long period of time became a man, they literally laugh in your face. You got to be kidding me. Because the simple logic of their mind says, no, that can't possibly be true. Because when a man and a woman get together, they don't have a monkey or something else. They have a small man-child or woman child, okay? Okay? If you ever want to upset a mother who has just given birth, call it a monkey. She'll come out of that bed and wring your dang neck, okay? So mutations do happen. So we are not saying evolution does not happen. It does happen. Things are changing, okay? But they're going down. These mutations are going down, okay? Nothing is getting better. We're going to be talking about that. So these are the mutations. This separates it from Darwinianism, okay? Now, what separates factual evolution from the Darwinian is that these changes do not leap from one species to another, okay? A fruit fly gives birth to fruit flies. It's as simple as that. Snakes give birth to snakes. Horses give birth to horses. People give, you get the idea. There has never been a single observation throughout man's recorded history, okay, where anybody has seen something different than what we see today. There is the evidence. What are you going to do with that? So to believe otherwise, in spite of the evidence that's available, is to believe something that you can't see, you can't test, you can't prove, and therefore it becomes faith. You want to choose to believe something that you can't see, you can't test, and you can't reproduce. It's called faith. Now, isn't that the problem that they have with you and I? Isn't it the science teacher that says to the kids at the high school class, you Christians are foolish to believe in a God that you can't see, you can't touch. I mean, after all, you claim this God gave us those senses. He was the one that gave you sight. He was the one that gave you hearing and smell and taste and touch. And yet you want to believe in a being that you can do none of those things with, to which you can ask the question, well, you know, I can't see, taste, touch, or feel, even if I could, your brain. And yet I believe that it exists. So, I mean, how far do you want to take this? The absurdity of that statement is just nonsense. Did you see the Big Bang, Mr. Science Teacher? Well, no. Well, how do you know it exists? Where did the stuff that caused the Big Bang come from? Well, you just have to believe it was there. Oh, I see. So you can apply the same principles there, but because it's science, it's okay. But when it comes to Scripture and the evidence that I believe in, Now it's faith. And the two, certainly, according to our society, are not compatible. Really? That's not true at all. That is not true at all. The Bible absolutely supports true science. Absolutely. Science and faith are not a problem, except in the mind of a Darwinian evolutionist. They're not for you and I. Okay? Now, note the difference. And this is where you can have some kind of fun, because most people don't know this. They'll claim that they have this belief in Darwinism, but they can't even get to the most elementary terms. Notice the difference. The first one, the factual evolution, is what we call microevolution. In other words, very small changes, mutations, are taking place within any species at any time. Okay? That's knowable, it's observable, it's testable. Okay? But the difference is macroevolution. This is where the thing comes in. Because, see, macro means a jump from one species to another, from a fish to a lizard. Okay? That's what macroevolution is about. That is Darwinian evolution. That's what they believe. Okay? And so you can see that there's this major difference. Now, they will admit that there is microevolution happening as well, because you can't deny it. We just described the mutations of, you know, between animals and plants, and we could go on and on and on. You get the idea, okay? But you have to understand something. To come to any conclusion, whether it's from a creationist perspective or whether it's from an evolutionist perspective, notice I'm not saying creationist or a scientific, because I've already hopefully identified to you that creation is scientific, the study of creation, because of the evidence that we all have to study. But I thought, before you can come to these things, we need to understand that there's a sequence that draws these things out. So a sequence to a scientific law. Now notice the word law. This is not theory. We're going to see the difference here in just a minute. But I want you to notice that. This is something that has been established, has been tested, has been proved, and is repeating itself. Okay? So here's the first thing you do. You start with a conjecture. How do you define a conjecture? Simply put, I mean, it's obviously much broader than this, but this is it in a nutshell. It's an unformulated idea, a starting point. When Charles Darwin makes a trip to the Galapagos Islands, knowing full well that there is no God, we're going to read a quote, because this is where it all stems from, of Darwin himself. And he makes this trip there, looking and trying to make sure that he can show that there isn't a God. And he comes upon, and it's identified that he finds over 20 different types of finches. Some of the finches have more feathers than others. Some are different colored feathers. Some have longer beaks. Some have shorter beaks. Some, you know, medium-sized beaks. So he identifies all of these, and he says, his conjecture is, here is proof in evolution, macroevolution. What's the problem? They're all finches. He didn't find a finchizard. He found finches that all look different. Okay? That's all. This was his conjecture. But he built off of that conjecture as a quote-unquote scientist, ignoring the rules of science, which we're going to look at. I've already quoted him a couple times. So then he then develops his hypothesis based on his conjecture, a specified testable statement that can be falsified. In other words, there can be another side to this. You've got to leave it open to interpretation. Well, my conjecture is that we've recognized a macroevolution in these finches. Therefore, my hypothesis is that we can test it, because I can show you the finches. There's a purple finch, a yellow finch, and a blue finch. There's differences. I can show those to you. Therein lies my hypothesis. Next, a theory develops. Oh, after the hypothesis has been tested by many people over time and has not been proved, it is called a theory. So what does he do? Look, you guys, what I found. My conjecture and my hypothesis is that there are all of these different finches, the blue, the purple, the yellow finch. And they said, yes, Mr. Darwin, we can see that. We all, this group of people, oh, we all understand now that we're looking at this, because many people now have agreed to something that can be tested. These things exist. The evidence is right there in front of you. it becomes a theory. But that's as far as it goes. Some would claim it shouldn't even be on, it shouldn't even get to hypothesis. But anyways. Well, then there's the fourth step. And of course, the final step of our sequence, that's a law. This is a theory that has withstood the test of time, has, notice, never been contradicted, and can tell you, based on all of the stuff, that you can chart now a pattern moving forward, that the thing is going to continue the same way. Now, clearly, I shouldn't have to explain to you guys that they can't do this. It's why it remains a theory. Because this cannot happen with this theory, okay? It won't withstand the test of time and hasn't by their own testimonies. It is being contradicted, and the model that it predicts is failing. Because mutations, when they happen, for the most part, the vast majority are bad mutations. Mutations that happen within the DNA that cause a person. Well, this is what happened to my son-in-law, David. Something within his genetic system, within his genetic code, within his DNA was off. There's something wrong in there, a mutation that had caused his kidneys to scar over, which has now caused him to need a kidney. Now, that's the way most mutations by far happen. They are never positive. In other words, they never move things forward. Most of the time, backward, okay? Almost always. But this is what a theory is. Now, let's take a look at some examples of law. The first one is that the second law of thermodynamics. Now, did you notice that? Not the theory of thermodynamics, the law of thermodynamics. What is the second law of thermodynamics, also known as entropy? That all things are getting worse. This is a law, not a theory. The theory, Darwin's theory, is that things are getting better. But the law says, no, they're not. They're not getting better. You cannot point to, in this life, throughout the history of known history, anything that has gotten better. Nothing. The minute conception takes place within the womb, not only has the process of life begun, but the process of death as well. It's not getting better. And we all know what happens as we climb in life, right? We even call it over the hill. We know where our journey is going. We're not getting younger. Too bad. It'd be kind of cool if the evolutionists were right. And we were getting better, but that's not what's happening. So now, just based on this, you have a decision to make. Because Darwin says things are getting better, and one species is jumping to another, producing a more adequate species that now is able to survive in spite of the others, survival of the fittest. This is what he tells us, and yet that's his theory, and yet the law says no. So in just this, we could stop here. You have a choice to make. Which are you going to listen to, the theory or the law? The one that can't be tested, proven, or anything else, or the law which can and has proven itself and is still telling us that nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to get better. Secondly, we're going to be talking about, I take that back, because the way I was going to go with this, we would have got into these, but I will touch on these. These are the laws of biology. I put two of them down. One, life, now remember, law can be observed, remember, and it's withstood the test of time, it's never been contradicted, and it can tell you about what's going to happen in the future, okay? Well, the law of biology is that life can only come from life, okay? Something dead cannot produce life. Now, why is that important? Because we're told that after the Big Bang, billions and billions of years ago, and that the Earth formed itself and began to cool as it was covered with water, that this water which was created from a process of hydrogen and all of this other stuff, all of a sudden, there's this water, and within this water is life. The necessity, the things necessary, the molecules, the proteins, the branched chain amino acids, the RNA, the DNA, all of the stuff necessary to create life was in there. Does anybody have a problem with that? Yeah, imagine that. Well, where did that come from, Mr. Scientist? Well, we don't know. But we believe it to be true. So again, we're exercising faith. Oh, I'm beginning to get a clear picture here. How could water with no life in it possibly produce life? The evidence completely says it can't. It can't. And even if it could, to get the one single cell, the smallest known thing, do you know that there is over 200 structures of DNA just within the smallest single cell unit? And within that 200 plus, structure, you got to have DNA, which has to be lined up perfectly. You have to have RNA, which is lined up perfectly. You have to have the branched chain amino acids, which come into the proteins, and they have to be lined up perfectly. Now, do you understand why it's called chance? It's just happened by chance, but the law of biology says that can't be. Now, you can leave a cup of water sitting on here all you want. Now, if it's isolated, dust comes in, or somebody comes by and throws a crumb from a cupcake goes in there. Now, you leave that set long enough, something's going to grow in that water, isn't it? Because life has been introduced to it. Cells and stuff that are in there. But if you isolate that thing where it doesn't have any outside influence, that water will remain that water till the cows come home. Okay? Speaking of cows, no, we'll just leave that there. But that's the laws of biology, folks. Everybody observes this. And yet, there are people out there, scientists, PhD, you know, piled higher and deeper, those guys, that keep telling us that this happened. That for whatever reason, the law of biology for this particular time just happened to be suspended. And lo and behold, there's DNA that builds itself into the first cell. Okay? The primordial soup. Is what we hear. We understand that, right? Well, that's kind of far-fetched, wouldn't you say? What does the evidence suggest? And that's our point. Life can only come from life. But there's a second thing. Like only begets like. Now let's look at this in light of, oh man, I'm running myself out of time already. You guys got to quit talking so much. Let's just look at paleontology, the study of fossils, okay? Now, I hope you know this. If you don't, hopefully this is a new revelation for you. Billions and billions of years, they tell us, from that little life single cell thing that grew into this thing and worked its way out of that pond, and it became this first bacterium. And then it grew into this, and from that we get plants, and we get birds, and we get fish, and we get all of this other stuff. And at first it was this crawly thing, and then it became this, and then it became this, and then it became this, right? Macroevolution. Evidence? Doesn't exist. Doesn't exist anywhere. So as this thing moves along, the paleontologist, the fossil guy says, well, surely you could see it within the fossils. I mean, we got the trilobite down here, and the trilobite works its way up and becomes a fish. And then we have the fish, and it works its way up, and it becomes the lizard. Okay, that sounds good. How long did it take between the trilobite and the fish? Oh, millions and millions of years. Okay, well then, where are the millifish? Fossils. I mean, if we have a fossil of a trilobite and fossils of fishes by the millions, and it took millions of years to get there, where's the link between the two exactly? Where we call them transitional fossils. So where's the trillish at? Where's it at? Well, it doesn't exist. Well, you know, something happened and, you know, things were happening in the earth. Okay, well, let's move a step farther. Well, then we have, you know, at this level within the geologic column, which doesn't exist. Within the geologic column, we have the fish, and we know that it took hundreds of millions of years, about 200 to 300 million is what they claim, before that fish becomes the lizard. So, Mr. Paleontologist, we have millions and literally millions of fossils of fish. Yes, we do. And we have millions and millions of fossils of lizards. Yes, we do. And it took 200 million to 300 million years for the fish to become the lizard. Yes, that's exactly right. Well, then where are the fossils of the fizzard? Where are they? They don't exist. Do you know why? Because God said, let there be animals to walk on the land. And let there be fish in the sea. Do you know what you find in the fossil record? Fish appear, boom! 200 million years ago, that's what they want to believe, that's fine. 200 million years ago, okay. What do we still find if a fish is buried rapidly? A fish fossil, just like one would expect. Just like the lizard, and it goes on and on. There's no transitional forms, none. They are non-existent, okay. So, like only begets like. There's no such thing as a fizzard, okay. Because a fish didn't become a lizard, okay. And there's no ape men because apes didn't become men. We have fossils of apes. Yes, yes, yes. We have fossils of man. Yes, yes, yes. But we don't have fossils of ape men. We don't have them. Okay? It's as simple as that. I was going to get into a lot more of that. So let's define science real quickly. I've already did this, so we don't need to spend a lot of time. How you define science? Well, it's the observation of the evidence. Of the evidence of here and now. Okay, now here's another problem. When they're looking at the evidence, they're looking at it in the what? Here and the now. Okay, they weren't there as to see it billions of years ago when it happened. So there's the first problem. Okay, but not only has it got to be observational, it's got to be testable. You have to be able to test the evidence for dates and so on and so forth. And they tell us all the rock dates by the radioisotopes found within the rock. It dates to 15 billion years. What they're failing to tell you is one of their 8 tests showed that number. The other test showed, the other tests between 1 and number 8 showed 3,000 years, 8,000 years, 10,000 years, 200,000 years. But you see, they've got a bias. They've got to fit in old Earth. So they throw out the other 7 and they say billions. That's what they do. I'm telling you, we're going to see it in just a sec. Reproduction of evidence. You got to be able to reproduce it. Well, if you can test it, if it was testable then, you should be able to test it now. And they tell us that you can. And there's so much more to this. Holy cow, I'm running myself out. So, here we go. Data, the evidence. Okay? This is available for everyone to see. Everyone. It doesn't matter whether you believe in the scripture or whether you believe it came from apes. It's there for all to see. This is just some of the disciplines. Astronomy, geology, biology, anthropology, paleontology. We could go on and on. Okay? Cosmology. Not astrology. Anyway. Okay. But here's the problem. All of us will view that evidence with an assumption, a bias, or a presupposition. I will look at something through the eyes of faith because I believe in the scripture. So I am absolutely biased in my opinion. I make no bones about it. You dang right. I'm going to look at that bone as coming from creation. I'm not afraid to admit I'm bringing my bias. But of course, the other side is as well. Well, here's the thing. If you bring your assumption and your bias, or your bias and your presuppositions on the data, notice what happens. Then you're going to form your interpretation of that evidence. If you're looking for an old earth without a designer, in other words, a creator, well, that's what the evidence is going to say to you. If you're looking for it from the other perspective, well, it's going to say the same to you. Okay? So what's the answer? The evidence. Go back to the evidence. Do the tests. What do the tests show? Does it line up more with Darwinianism or does it line up more with creationism? Which is the more likely scenario? We make no mistake about, we're taking a lot of this on faith. There's no question about it, even though creationists are doing scientific tests. But nevertheless, so here's another way to look at this, the data of the evidence. You see, if you believe that there's no creator, then therefore, if there's no creator, there's no design, and you come to the data with that, well, here's what you're going to end up with, the old universe and what we know today as Darwinianism or evolution. But on the other hand, and this is what I've been saying, if you come by creator design, the evidence is going to show you, well, that there is a new universe and there is a design because there's a creator, you see? But it's not about the presuppositions biased, okay, or the assumptions. It's about the data. What does the data show? Okay? Now, why did all this start with? Here's the quote from Darwin. Now, pay attention to this. Watch this. A man who has no assured and ever-present belief in the existence of a personal God or of a future existence with retribution and reward can have for his rule of life, as far as I can see, only to follow, watch this now, those impulses and instincts which are the strongest or which seem to him the best ones. That's Darwinianism. In other words, you can pretty much do whatever you want if it's okay with you because there's no God. So if you want to hold to this theory, then don't come complaining to me when somebody molests children or walks into a school and blows 20 of them away. How do you know that wasn't what seemed best to him at the time? He has no God to answer to, according to you. What kind of students are we producing if this is the mindset? Do you see the problem with this? Take God out of the equation, you have absolute chaos and anarchy. Evidence? Watch the news. This is what's happening in our world. It's as simple as that. Well, survival of the fittest. Well, I'm more fit than you are. I choose that you don't survive. What are you going to do about it? Think about it. Isn't that the logical conclusion? Isn't that exactly what he's saying? You have this. I'm taking it. And you can't stop me because it's the best to me. And since I have no God to be accountable to, and there's no retribution or reward after this, then it really doesn't matter, does it? You know, I choose to take. There's the logical conclusion. Now, we could go on and on and on, but that's pretty obvious. The evolutionary model, natural origin of all things. Natural origin. Did you catch that? Well, how do you equate that with the next statements? Chance, random mutation, and natural selection. So excuse me, you're trying to say that chance selects? Isn't there an issue with that? Absolutely. Well, the net basic increase in complexity over time. Again, second law of thermodynamics. Anything getting better? No? Oh, no, knowledge is increasing, but the scripture told us that. That shouldn't surprise us. Okay, but ultimately, those people that are getting older and getting smarter are still going to die. Okay, haven't figured that one out yet. Earth history, according to the evolutionary model, is dominated by uniform events. It's called neocatastrophism. In other words, the way things are today is the way that they were billions of years ago. This is why the radiocarbon, the isometric, potassium argon, all of the different types of measurements, they'll tell you, well, we're measuring these today and we can see the rate of decay today. And so that tells us that this must have been, you know, it would have taken billions of years. Well, so you're assuming that that's the same rate of decay that happened in your billions of years ago? Well, absolutely. Other programs that you see on TV, we call this uniformitarianism. Everything that you see as far as these types of things that's happening today is what was happening billions of years ago. Didn't you guys teach us there was this huge ice age? Yeah. What did you say happened to the ice age? Oh, it changed everything. Hello. We're back to the billions of years, but the galaxy is 7,000 years old. Why doesn't anybody call these people on this? It drives me insane. Here's another thing. Here's some fun stuff to throw out. Gosh, I gotta hurry. Does cold exist? Stop and think about it now. Does cold exist?
C-O-A-L?
No, it does not. C-O-L-D, cold. It does not. What is cold? The absence of heat. There's no such thing as cold. It's a phrase, a word that we use to describe when the absence of heat gets to the point where it's uncomfortable. But it doesn't exist. All the way down to minus 485 degrees. We read that God said, let there be light. And there was light. Energy. Energy. Heat. And all the other stuff that goes on. Cold is nothing more than the absence of heat. Is there such a thing as darkness? No. What is darkness? The absence of light. God said, let there be light. And then he separated light from darkness. He did not create darkness. Darkness is the absence of light. Now, here's a fun one. What is death? the second law of thermodynamics, the absence of life. You see, there, folks, is the reality. But we're never told that. We're never told these things. You know why? Because the absence of heat resulting in cold, the absence of light resulting in darkness, the absence of light resulting in death are found in Genesis chapter 1. That's why you're not told. Okay? predictions of the evolution model. Transitional forms, we already talked about that. No such things as fizzards. Beneficial mutations, not so much. Things getting better, nope. Law of thermodynamics says no. New species, no. The species that we find in the geological quote-unquote column in fossils is the same today as it was then. We have fossils of jellyfish that are supposed to date to back to billions of years. Do you know what? Those jellyfish look just like jellyfish today that we go swimming with, and sometimes they sting us. Nothing has changed in the jellyfish. That goes for invertebrates, we could go on and on. Okay? Nothing has changed. All right, that their words may be used against them, and then I'll finish with this. You got these quotes, so don't worry about trying to get them. Now, these are all scientists. Now, you notice the dates are really old. I was looking for newer quotes, and I thought, no, I'm going to use the old quotes. And the reason is because these guys recognized this and were saying this stuff 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. They themselves, the evolutionists, scientists, and yet their words have gone unheeded. That's what this book is. I'm telling you. Thousands of these things. I just picked a couple for our thing. Notice this. By presenting a systematic critique of the current Darwinian model, ranging from paleontology, the study of fossils, to molecular biology, the study of life, I have tried to show why I believe that the problems are too severe and too intractable to offer any hope of resolution in terms of the orthodox Darwinian framework. This guy doesn't become a creationist. He stays a scientist. But he's abandoning Darwinianism. Okay? But they've come up with nothing better since, so don't worry about it. And that consequently, the conservative view is no longer tenable. 1985. Anybody ever tell you that? Ever seen this guy on TV? No. You won't either. Because there's a bias. You got to keep it out. There's two quotes here back to back from the same guy. As we know, there is a great divergence of opinion among biologists, not only about the causes for evolution, but even about the actual process. This guy's really getting to the heart of the issue. This divergence exists because the evidence, there it is unsatisfactory and does not permit any certain conclusion. Why? Because you can't test it. You couldn't see it. That's why. All of those things that lead to a law and define science. Okay? And does not permit it. It is therefore right and proper to draw the attention of the non-scientific public. That would be you and me. The non-scientific public to the disagreements about evolution. Did they ever follow this man's words? No. We're told that you can't teach evolution. I'm sorry, creation. But this guy's saying, come on, guys, there's another side to this, and we need to be out there open to the public with this. I mean, good science suggests that we would say, look, there is another side to this. This is another quote from the same guy here, Thompson. This situation where scientific men rally to the defense of a doctrine they are unable to define scientifically, much less demonstrate with scientific rigor, attempting to maintain its credit with the public. I love this guy because he brings in the public all the time. By the suppression of criticism, they don't want you and I criticizing this. You're called a bigot. You're called a creationist. You're called a stupid Christian. A holier than thou. You know, you've heard it all. And the elimination of difficulties is abnormal and undesirable in science. One more. This one goes to, this is the one. Let me see. The theory for evolution with which our studious, here it is, this is the one to you kids. Pay attention to what this guy said in 1937. Now some of you were there. Most of us were not. This was the year my dad was born, for goodness sake. This guy said this in 1937, and it's went unheeded for 75 years, working on 76. The theories for evolution with which our studious youth have been deceived. This is a scientist, folks, not a creation scientist. And he's a French scientist, no less. That's why you guys yelled him French words down there. His name is Le Moyen. Is that how you'd say that? You're French. How do you say that? Lumois. Oh, Lumois. Well, that's cool. Lumois. That sounds cool. The theories of evolution with which our studious youth have been deceived can constitute actually a dogma that all the world continues to teach. This guy nailed it in 1937. But each in his specialty, the zoologist or the botanist, ascertains that none of the explanations within the Darwinian thought furnished is adequate. Why do you say that? Lemoine. 1937. Such a world-renowned speaker that there's actually a set of scientific volumes, that's what this is part of it, scientific encyclopedias that this guy did. This is how brilliant this man was. Have you ever heard that before?
No.
Yeah, me either. Imagine that. Because what did he say? Our studious youth have been deceived, a dogma that the world continues to teach in spite of knowing the facts. Why? Because as Darwin said, can't possibly be a God. You see, if there's a God out there, then it means you were not. It means that you're accountable to him. And then we're just about. So the Big Bang is a fizzling dud. The primordial soup is missing its ingredients. The missing link is still missing. The geologic column has collapsed. Can't even collapse. It doesn't exist. People, you guys in school, you see that geologic column in your textbooks and you show your teacher, tell me where this shows up in the world. And if they have any honesty in them or integrity in them at all, they will say no place. It's an artist's conception of what it would look like if Darwinianism was true. It does not exist. The geologic column has collapsed. Oh, and I was going to get into this and I just didn't do this, but I thought this was really clever. The Grand Canyon is flooded with catastrophe. Because why does the Grand Canyon exist? Millions and billions of years of a little river running through? No? God said, Noah, get in the boat. That's why it exists. And there's proof everywhere in it, but they never tell you that. And the proof? Mount St. Helens, 1980. One quarter the size of the Grand Canyon from one catastrophe in a matter of 30 days. One quarter the size. All of the geological examples, all of the paleontology, all the stuff came out. So I thought I was being really clever there, but I didn't get to that one. Lucy. The ape Lucy, she ain't no lady. Okay? They told us she's a lady. Okay? And fossils are a fizzard story. It's as simple as that. Folks, there is the evidence. Now, I presented to you. What you do with that is up to you. Okay? We're studying Genesis because the one that was there did observe, did test it and say it was good, is named God. And that's why we're studying to find his position. Billions of years ago, bang! Yeah, okay. This is why Darwinian evolution is still a theory. And last, my little clever thing, or not this one. In the beginning, God. Need we say anything else? No. There once was an old man from Esser whose knowledge grew lesser and lesser. It at last grew so small he knew nothing at all, and now he's a college professor. Let's pray.